Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
Now, I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
All right. Welcome in on a Tuesday afternoon from the Capital Region. This is AM 870 WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. We got Connor Mathis in studio with me riding shotgun all hour, and we'll have Alec Rio behind the glass working the board as well. Al will be back for Friday's show, previewing the divisional round of the NFL playoffs and whatnot, so excited for the great Al Martin to be back. But until then, the boys and I will hold down the fort. I kind of want to lead off today's show by, you know, offering a congratulations, much like I did yesterday following Wildcard Weekend. You know, I congratulated Al Martin on, you know, the glorious triumph of his Dallas Cowboys over the Seattle Seahawks. Now, obviously, I talked about it yesterday. I thought Pete Carroll's game plan absolutely sucked in that game. But, you know, here we are. The Cowboys are in the divisional round, so Al deserved, you know, his props. You know, switching gears a little bit today, is I want to congratulate myself. I told Connor yesterday behind the glass that everyone's sleeping on Clemson. No one, you know, sees Clemson as a contender. You know, people didn't see Clemson as a team that had a shot to win this game, and I thought Clemson was vastly underrated. You know, I gave my thoughts on Trevor Lawrence and about how I understand that he's just a true freshman now, but that kid's got all kinds of talent. And by the time his college career is over, he will be the best quarterback Clemson has ever seen. He will be better than Deshaun Watson. And I think he's put himself in a great position to, you know, kind of achieve that a couple of years down the road, just, you know, leading off his career as a true freshman with a 44-16 drubbing over the Alabama Crimson Tide. So, you know, I always said, I said it yesterday, is, you know, Tua Tagovailoa in that Georgia game, you know, he looked very mortal when he faced a talented defense. And, you know, I think we kind of saw yesterday the difference between, you know, Kirby Smart at Georgia and Dabo Sweeney at Clemson is, you know, it was like this for Georgia in the national championship game last year as well, where they got up a couple scores on Alabama, and Kirby Smart got cute. He stopped playing to win, and he started playing not to lose. You know, we didn't see that, obviously, from Dabo Sweeney in yesterday's game. He kept his foot on the gas all the way through, and you know, they never really committed to the run and played any type of trestle ball. You know, they stayed on top of things. They treated the score. You know, they said at halftime, Dabo said that, you know, coming into the second half, they needed to treat the score like it was 0-0. And they did that, and they cruised to a 44-16 win that nobody, myself included, predicted. But, you know, I did think the Clemson Tigers were going to win that game. So, you know, I just had to offer some congratulations to myself on that one. Connor, have you anything to say about doubting me and believing that Clemson could win this game?
All I got to say is I guess Dabo Sweeney must have the time stone, saw all the possibilities of them losing in every simulation, but they somehow pulled it out. I was really impressed with that. That defense is
They're outstanding.
I knew they were good, but my goodness.
And you got to factor in they're missing their best defensive player, arguably. I mean, it's Cleveland Farrell or it's Dexter Lawrence. I don't know which one's the best. It's 1 and 1A, but you know, not having that big presence in the middle, they were still able to do pretty well on defense, come up with some fourth down stops, get the ball turned over. So, you know, all in all, a very, very, very impressive win for the Clemson Tigers. And, you know, I have a question for all of you listeners out there, because I kind of want to see where you're at with it, because, you know, I kind of think we're at a crossroads in college football where, you know, the last couple of years, Clemson's just kind of been, they've been America's team almost, if you will, just because they've been that team that's been in the national championship now three out of the last four years. But they're not Alabama. And so for that reason, I think a lot of people, you know, were pulling for Clemson. And obviously, I think they were last night as well. You know, I think the vast majority of sports fans, you know, even seeing Clemson win one a couple of years ago, we're still pulling for Clemson to beat Alabama because, you know, they still viewed Alabama as at the top of the mountain. And I still think Alabama is at the top of the mountain, but I just don't think they're alone anymore. I just think Clemson and Alabama have distanced themselves from the rest of the pack so much that this is kind of where we're at in college football right now. So, you know, I'll be interested to hear from the listeners out there. 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. I want to know where you're at with this whole thing because, you know, I got a question for you, and I'll just ask it right after the quick hit headliners. But speaking of those quick hit headliners, let's hit them right now. We lead off our current sports quick hit headliners with just that. Clemson over the Alabama Crimson Tide in last night's college football playoff championship game. Here are some of the highlights from the 44-16 drubbing the Tide received at the hands of the Clemson Tigers.
Third throw in three plays. It's intercepted. And the Tigers are going the other way. A.J. Terrell with a pick six.
Here's Tua now. He's got Josh Jacobs behind him. Play action fake. Tua loads up, looks long, tries to find Jerry Jeudy. He's got it. He'll break a tackle. He's going to go in. Touchdown, Alabama. 62 yards right back at you.
He'll hand it off and give it to Etienne coming left side. Etienne cuts it to the 15. He's at the 10, at the 5. Stays on his feet. Hit it for the end zone and in. Etienne refused to go down. Scores from 17. Clemson retakes the lead. 13-7 with 10:35 left here first quarter.
Damian Harris. He fake it to him. Tua rolling out and flips it to a wide open Hale Hinches.
Touchdown, Alabama. His third touchdown of the year. He had two against Texas A&M, and he has one here tonight.
Tigers make a statement as Etienne walks in, stretching the lead. And the Tide, Simon. Tua looking to throw in first down. Launches it for Jeudy.
And he overthrows it. Picked off by Mullen at the 10. He'll return it right side, close to the 15, 20, 25, 30. At the 40, the 45, and steps out of bounds close to midfield. The second pickoff of Tagovailoa.
It's a shovel pass in the middle. And battling his way to the end zone. Etienne for a second time. Tigers on fire.
Back to throw.
He doesn't see him.
Oh, he's hit, and the ball comes out. It's recovered by Ross Piercebaker, the center.
And backpedaling, Lawrence flips it open, wide open. Justin Ross off and running. The Alabama native wins the foot race, and Clemson strengthens its grip on this championship game. He's going to try to run for it. Not going to get there.
Oh, wow.
Not going to get there.
Lawrence, back to throw. Looks across the middle. Throws it back in the end zone. Pop, Higgins, touchdown.
That kid cannot be 19 years old. Come on. I mean, he looks like a 10-year NFL veteran.
I mean, he looks like he's been there his whole life.
And there you have it. So I just talked to Connor off air just a second ago about Justin Ross, the true freshman receiver for the Clemson Tigers. And he said he didn't hear the story about him in the third quarter. I'm just kind of curious. Alec, did you hear what Kirk Herbstreit said about Justin Ross in the third quarter of yesterday's game?
No, I did not,
no,
actually.
No, you did not at all? So Justin Ross, his freshman year of high school, was playing varsity football in the state of Alabama. And he wanted to quit because all of his friends were on JV. He was a true freshman playing varsity football. He didn't want to play anymore because he wasn't with any of his buddies. It must be nice to be that talented at anything, right?
I know.
That's just crazy. But, you know, Obviously, Dabo's second win in 3 years. You know, huge moment for the Clemson Tigers. And here is Coach Dabo Swinney on the win.
You know, very few people. There's so many great coaches that are so deserving of a moment like this that never get the chance to experience it. And to get to do it once and now to get to do it again, you know, it's a blessing. It's just simply the grace of the good Lord to allow us to experience something like this. And I'm so happy for our team, our fans, our administration, our former players that love the ball. There ain't never been a 15-0 team, and I know we're not supposed to be here. We're just little old Clemson, and I'm not supposed to be here, but we are, and I am. And how about them Tigers, man? I'm so proud of our guys, these seniors. We beat Notre Dame and Alabama. We left no doubt, and we walk off this field tonight as the first 15-0 team in college football history. And
As mentioned by Dabo just now, Clemson is the first team in the AP poll era dating all the way back to 1936 to finish their season 15-0. All right, switching gears here. The Michigan Wolverines finished number 14th in the final AP poll of the season after a rough end to their year, which saw them be beaten down by the Ohio State Buckeyes and then the Florida Gators. The Wolverines were the second highest ranked Big Ten team behind just the Ohio State Buckeyes, who finished third overall. National champion Clemson, no surprise, was a unanimous choice for number one in the nation, receiving all 61 first-place votes, followed by Bama at number two. All right, sticking with college football, Dwayne Haskins, quarterback of Ohio State, is NFL-bound after one spectacular season under center for the Buckeyes. The third-year sophomore who rewrote the school record book, you know, how about that, 1 year basically after JT Barrett rewrote the whole record book, had been expected to enter the draft and is a projected first-round pick. Haskins said on Twitter yesterday that he would forego his final year of eligibility after many thoughts and prayers with family and close friends. He wrote that just as it was a boyhood dream to play for Ohio State, he has also dreamed of being an NFL quarterback. His sturdy 6'3", 220-pound frame, quick release, and exceptional accuracy make him a top prospect. He smashed most of Ohio State's passing records as well as many of the Big Ten's passing records, throwing for a nation-leading 50 touchdowns. He finished third in Heisman Trophy voting behind only Oklahoma's Kyler Murray and Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa. I was talking to Connor Mathis a couple minutes before the show here about just how much I like Dwayne Haskins, and I think he's an outstanding quarterback prospect. But I got one team for you that I just don't think he'll be a good fit on, and I hope we can get to that later in the week because, you know, not to spoil it, but it's a team that's in the market for a quarterback, and, you know, I just don't think he'd be a good fit there. You know, rooting for Dwayne Haskins, I really hope he doesn't wind up with this team. So I hope to get to that tomorrow, maybe Thursday. You know, that could be a good discussion. But all right, a Florida man has been arrested for threats against the family of Tyler Trent. This is a really, really heartbreaking story just to hear about. A Deltona man has been jailed after deputies say he used Facebook to threaten to kill a family member of Purdue University superfan and cancer activist Tyler Trent, according to the Volusia County Sheriff's Office. John Pinkham, 39, was arrested at his home on Duncan Street at about 3:15 p.m. Monday and faces a felony charge of making written threats to kill or injure. Trent, a former Purdue University student and college football superfan, who inspired many with his battle against cancer, died Tuesday, January 1st of 2019. He was 20 years old. He was the Purdue superfan who inspired many with his fight against cancer. And, you know, it was a heartbreaking story to hear him pass away. You know, it was really cool when Purdue came to Spartan Stadium earlier this season. And, you know, every single kickoff, many Spartan grads, recent Spartan grads, kind of got a chant going of cancer sucks. Because I believe he was at the game for, I believe he was at that game. I'm not entirely sure, but I believe he was. And you know what? It was a great story following him all season long. And, you know, he'll be dearly missed. The San Antonio Spurs down the Detroit Pistons 119-107 from Little Caesars Arena last night. With the win, Coach Greg Popovich has moved another step higher on the NBA's career wins list. Popovich now has 1,221 victories. He's tied with Jerry Sloan for third place, trailing only Don Nelson and Lenny Wilkins. So if he's tied with Jerry Sloan, it stands to reason that by this weekend, he'll have taken sole control of third place.
LaMarcus Aldridge scored 25 points for the Spurs. Blake Griffin scored 34 for Detroit. How about Blake Griffin? You know, I was never a fan of that trade from the Pistons to acquire him, but Blake Griffin's done nothing but play his ass off. And, you know, since he's gotten to Detroit, he's managed to stay healthy as well. So that's great to see. You know, I feel sorry for Blake Griffin. Just not having much help around him, and he really has to carry this team, you know. It's tough to see, but Andre Drummond added 19 points as well and 14 rebounds. Next up, the Detroit Pistons will visit Los Angeles to take on LeBron James and the LA Lakers tomorrow night. MSU faces Purdue at home tonight. It's basketball season, Spartan fans. We've already looked way past football season. I understand the national championship game was yesterday. But Spartan fans are looking to erase all the memories of this past football season. Tip-off for tonight's game will be 9 p.m. from the Breslin Center. Purdue comes into this game at 9-5 and 2-1 in the Big Ten. And Michigan State coming off that impressive victory from Value City Arena over the weekend against the Ohio State Buckeyes. They are now 13-2 and 4-0 in the Big Ten. Joshua Langford is expected to miss his second straight game with an ankle injury. I'll kind of give you some more thoughts on where I'm at with the Michigan State Spartans. And Joshua Langford, you know, I have kind of an interesting off-the-wall take on that one. We'll get to that in segment two. The Green Bay Packers are hiring Titans offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur as their next head coach. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported Monday. Both sides have agreed to a four-year contract with a fifth-year team option. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported, per a source informed of the deal. LaFleur's ascension to the throne of cheese completes an astronomical rise in an incredibly short span of time. LaFleur just completed his first season as Titans OC under first-year head coach Mike Vrabel. LaFleur's track record as a play caller is just one season long, leaving him as somewhat of an unknown. Tennessee had an up-and-down season offensively, finding success and a groove for a portion of the campaign, but too often was forced to deal with injuries such as injuries suffered by Marcus Mariota, as well as inconsistencies up front. You know, funny fact for you, Marcus Mariota is the only quarterback in the NFL of which I'm aware who is protected by both a Wolverine and a Spartan. That Taylor Lewan is his left tackle and Jack Conklin is his right tackle. The Detroit Red Wings are looking to turn things around tonight as they host the Montreal Canadiens, having lost 7 of their last 8 games, trust the process, and sporting a subpar home record so far this season. With players like Darren Helm and Anthony Mantha coming back recently from injury, however, they might have a chance to stop the bleeding. The Red Wings are currently 14th in the Eastern Conference with a 16-21-7 record coming into tonight's matchup. Catch that action at 7:30 p.m. on Fox Sports Detroit. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you're more than welcome. The number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Share what's on your mind. Welcome back. Tuesday afternoon in the Lansing area. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. Al will be back Friday afternoon for that day's show. But it's me leading you up to tomorrow's show. I'll be here from 1 to 2 p.m. today, and I'll be out tomorrow. Connor Mathis will hold down the fort. I'll be back in Thursday. But I want to kind of lead off to today's show. You know, I just want to hop right into it, honestly, with this national championship discussion. And I want to talk to my guys in the studio, and I want to hear from you out there in listener land as well, kind of where you're at with the Clemson Tigers, just because, you know, it was a great story a couple of years ago when, you know, Dabo Swinney was able to get his first win against the Alabama Crimson Tide. You know, the last play of the game, obviously everyone remembers the Deshaun Watson to Hunter Renfrow throw as time expired to win the game. And,
you know, that was kind of the final step for Clemson as a national power. Obviously, they'd gotten to the national championship game and fallen short against Bama the year before. But I kind of want to know, is Clemson still likable to you as a team? Because, you know, you look at over the past four seasons, they have an identical record as Alabama. Both teams sit at 54-4 following yesterday's game. You know, each team has won two of the last four national championships. And, you know, I understand everybody out there hates Alabama. So, you know, I just kind of want to know, when does kind of the bloom come off the rose, if you will, for Clemson? You know, when are they not this, you know, cute team that, I don't want to say cute because that's a little bit disrespectful, because, I mean, obviously they're, any way you look at it, they're in the top two nationally as a college football power. But, you know, I kind of want to know, when does Clemson become that second villain? Because I think where we're at right now is, you know, with where Clemson and Alabama are at as teams, you know, they've kind of buried the rest of the college football world. And I understand, you know, Ohio State's obviously a great program. Georgia's another example under Kirby Smart. You know, Auburn any given year, you know, if they assemble the right talent, you know, they usually give Bama a run for their money in the Iron Bowl as well. But, you know, these two teams have really established themselves over the past 5 years as, you know, the two best teams in college football. And, you know, there's really no debate on it. And I just want to know, will you ever hate Clemson the way you hate Alabama? Because, you know, everyone roots for Clemson in this game just because, you know, it's like the common phrase, Alabama wins, America loses, or vice versa, you know. And to me, I don't see much difference there anymore. And, you know, listening to Dabo Sweeney, you know, post-game yesterday talking about how, you know, if we can do it, anybody can do it, that comes off as pretty disingenuous to me right now, as, you know, Clemson's one of the two most talented teams in college football. They have, you know, unlimited resources for Dabo Sweeney, seemingly. They got the best facilities in college football. You know, it's another level there in South Carolina, what they have at Clemson. So, you know, I just kind of want to know where you're at. I'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Connor, I'll start with you. Is there any point where, you know, you'll look at Clemson as similar to Bama and you'll be hoping, you know, a third team comes along and you'll root for them to displace Clemson? Just because, you know, I don't see how they're any different from Alabama at this point. Again, the last four seasons, both teams sit at 54-4 in that stretch. They've both won two national titles. Where are you at with this whole thing?
I'm still liking Clemson. I just think a part of the I don't like Nick Saban to begin with. I was very happy to see them lose. But I think part of the reason why Clemson's still likable is that Dabo Sweeney appears human. Like when you see those press conferences like leading up, there was one, I believe, before the playoff. He's like, we don't go into the locker room saying we want to win championship. I don't want to set goals for, like, necessarily, like, it's end all be all is getting to a championship and winning a championship. It's I'm trying to improve, you know, the cliche. I'm trying to improve these guys' lives. And I think he just appears more human. He appears more genuine. He, you know, he seems like he's having fun. Where with Nick Saban, he runs that team like it's a business. It doesn't matter, you know, very little emotion from Nick Saban. He just comes off, the Alabama team comes off as arrogant. They come off as you know, a little bit more of like college football's arch villain, the jerk, the bully.
Sure.
But I'm still going to go with Clemson. I think another thing too is, I don't know about you, but I'm getting tired. I think a lot of people are getting tired of this whole SEC propping itself up as like God's gift to the world for football. And I mean, yes, they're good. They are a good conference.
They're the best conference in college football. They are the best top to bottom conference.
They are the best conference.
But they're a very good conference. And I think, you know, people get tired of them constantly coming back and being like, well, you know, we don't need to schedule these tougher opponents from everywhere else. We are so good that we can go out and schedule not even the best FCS opponents. We can go schedule the Citadel every year, and nothing will change. I think a lot of it has to do with you know, people are just getting tired of that kind of SEC arrogance, and to see someone else do it from another conference, and one that isn't necessarily as big and as powerful as the SEC. The ACC is not, you know, not the most loaded of conferences, but I think it's a welcome change.
Okay, so that's a fair point. But one thing I want to do real quick here is I want to read off for you Clemson's out-of-conference schedule this year, because I don't think it's much different from Alabama's. You know, they played Furman, they played Georgia Southern, and they did play Texas A&M, I suppose, who's in the SEC. So
yeah.
I guess that's impressive. But, you know, I mean, my whole point is, you know, I obviously rooted for Clemson in that game, and, you know, I shared my thoughts on Trevor Lawrence yesterday. But, you know, for me, I just think Clemson and Alabama, especially with what Clemson did to Alabama yesterday, because that really has never happened in Nick Saban's career. He lost by 4 scores. It's unheralded. I view Clemson as right up there with Alabama, you know, moving forward. Oh, yeah, they're not the number two team anymore.
Oh, no,
it's number one and 1A.
Yeah, no, they're equals for sure. I think for me, when Clemson will become unlikable when they get that arrogance. If they become this team of like, oh, well, we're too good to schedule. We don't need to go out and schedule tough out of conference guys. Like, you know, they did play A&M, and that was a really good game. But at least for a little bit of it, when they get that arrogance of we don't need to prove ourselves anymore, we don't need to show you that we're that good, you should expect us to be that good, I think that's when they're going to lose their likability. Or if Dabo Swinney kind of shuts everyone out, because right now he still comes, despite the record, despite all this stuff, he still comes off as like a quote unquote normal dude. I mean, that's my two cents on it.
No, that's fair. But do you really think Nick Saban comes off as arrogant? Because I've never thought with his demeanor that Nick Saban's arrogant. I hear what you're saying with that they don't play teams out of conference, or if they will, they'll never travel anywhere. They'll always mm-hmm. play in a neutral field. I think that's a fair point. My whole take on it is I think Nick Saban takes a bunch of superstars and he instills in them a blue-collar mentality. As soon as they get on campus, he tells them that they're not worth anything and they need to work to, you know, attain everything they ever want to get at Alabama. So do you really think Nick Saban's arrogant, though?
There's a couple quotes through the years I remember if it was this year or last year, where he's in a press conference and someone had brought up, well, why are you playing this, I don't know, it was some lower tier school. He's like, because teams are afraid of us. It's like it's something to the effect of, well, teams are afraid of us. I'm like, are they afraid of you, or are you not willing to go out and schedule someone and actually play them on their terms, as opposed to, you know, kind of just sticking to your guns and staying where you're comfortable? I think that's where some of the arrogance comes off of, as like, well, we would play these teams, but they're just not willing to come. They're not willing to come to us, or thinking that when he talks, I get the sense like it comes off, or even when Bama is just comes off as a sense of, oh, we're better than everyone, and you need to know that, you need to respect that. And it just rubs me, and I think it rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
Interesting. You know, I've never really taken that watching Bama. I think people just view Alabama as they've been at the top for so long, people are rooting against them. But that's an interesting take. Shifting gears here a little bit, I want to talk about, you know, the quarterback play in yesterday's game, and specifically Tua Tagovailoa. You know, I guess we'll be left to speculate as to what the status of his ankle was going into that game, because obviously he had the surgery following Georgia.
Then he banged up his wrist or his hand, because that got taped up real quick in the second quarter, I believe.
Oh, okay. You know what? I didn't even see that. But you know what? Kind of what I've noticed from what I noticed from Tua Tagovailoa in that game, and you know, he doesn't get faced too often with a team with similar talent as his own. You know, this is really the second time he's faced a team like that all season, the first one being Georgia. And you know, as you recall, Tua Tagovailoa, if they would have kept him in that game, I firmly believe Alabama loses to Georgia. You know, I think it was a great, really great story to see Jalen Hurts come in and, you know, win that game, just because I don't want to say with everything Jalen Hurts has been through, because he's worked to get everything he's gotten at Alabama. But it was great to see, you know, his demeanor all season being benched by Tua. And, you know, let's face it, he wasn't going to be the guy for Alabama, but he stuck around to get his degree so he could, you know, presumably graduate transfer this offseason is what I would expect. But, you know, I give him a lot of credit for that, just because, you know, a lot of players won't do that, as, you know, they encounter some adversity and they'll leave. And I don't think those players are wrong for transferring either. I think both things can be true. I think, you know, players doing what's best for themselves, you know, if that means transferring to get some more playing time and, you know, making a business decision for yourself, I have no issue with it. But at the same time, you know, it's really easy to root for a guy like Jalen Hurts, even if he's playing at Alabama, just because he toughed it out getting benched, you know, by Tua at the end of last season. But, you know, what I saw from Tua in yesterday's game, and then as well as against Georgia, is,
You know, from the pocket, he's not nearly as dangerous of a passer as I thought he was. Tua Tagovailoa is very much at his best when he uses his athleticism to get out on the edge, because he's great at keeping his eyes downfield when he gets outside of the pocket. And you know what? When there's nothing open for him downfield, he's able to, you know, make plays with his feet as well. And that's kind of where Tua is at his best. And that was very, you know, I don't want to say alarming because I'm not really an Alabama fan, but that was very, you know, it was quite an awakening for me, I guess I'll say, in that, you know, following last year's national championship game, I thought Tua was quite possibly the best true freshman quarterback I'd ever seen. And I still think he's, you know, an unbelievable talent. And, you know, he can improve his pocket passing, certainly, because it certainly isn't bad. It's just not as good as, you know, he's just not at his best when he's from the pocket. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what he can do moving forward. But that was very interesting for me just to see, because, you know, we talked about yesterday, and people really talked all season about this being the best team that Nick Saban had ever assembled at Alabama, just because he finally had the quarterback. He wasn't playing with Greg McElroy under center. He wasn't playing with A.J. McCarron under center. He wasn't playing with Blake Sims. You know, he had a bona fide dual-threat quarterback who could make plays by himself and not just run the game the way Nick Saban wanted him to. But it'll just be interesting to see where Alabama goes next season, just because, you know, they struggled really in their two biggest games, I would say. First against Georgia, and then against Clemson, because no disrespect to Oklahoma, Kyler Murray. I love Kyler Murray. He's a great player.
He wasn't going to do it by himself.
No, exactly. He doesn't have the defense. I mean, CeeDee Lamb and Hollywood Brown are great receivers, even though Hollywood Brown didn't really show up for that game against Alabama. But, you know, all in all, they just didn't have the team to beat Alabama, obviously, because, you know, when Baker Mayfield was there a year ago, they had, I don't want to say they had a great defense, because I wouldn't say they had a great defense, but they had a respectable defense,
yeah.
And it gave them a chance to win. Kyler Murray never had that this season. So, for me, really, the two times Tua faced teams of kind of equal competition to his own, he really struggled this year. And it makes me wonder, you know, what kind of Tua are we going to see moving forward his junior year next year?
I don't know. I think he's still really good, but, you know, like you said, the two times that they faced a team that was on par or maybe a peg or two below Bama, they really had a tough go of it. I think teams are now figuring out the Tua formula. It's you know, Georgia brought some heat on him, and you know, the injury of course played a role. Let's not downplay that.
No,
I mean, as a quarterback, you're constantly bouncing around in the pocket and trying to, with Tua's case, move out of threats and things like that. So the injury definitely played a role, but when you see his performance against Georgia and then you see what Clemson was able to do to him, I mean, I think it was their first drive he threw the pick six?
Yeah, very first drive.
First drive, yeah. Through pick six, and you could tell something changed almost immediately. And again, throwing a pick six, opening drive, that'll take the wind out of your sails. But I think teams are starting to figure him out. Whereas with Lawrence's case, who played an absolutely phenomenal game, I wasn't ready to, you know, fully crown him, because I usually err on the side of caution when it comes to quarterbacks. But my goodness, he stepped up in every possible way yesterday. I think and Lawrence has shown up when the teams are at his. Are equal to his. Tua, I'm not so sure. It seems to be the other parts of the Alabama team have to step up when Tua faces a really good opponents.
You know, maybe this was what Nick Saban was worried about, you know, all those years when he didn't get a quarterback like Tua. Maybe it's just tougher when, you know, things go wrong and teams game plan for the quarterback a little bit. Maybe he thought it was tougher for a young kid to adapt like that. You know, we'll never know, but I think that's worth thinking about, I would say, honestly.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure about that one. I think you still have to go out and get the elite passer. But I mean, it makes sense. Like if you look at Saban's plans from years past, it's always been, we're gonna punch you in the mouth with our run game. And you know what? We saw in the playoff game against Michigan State. You know, we're gonna try to punch you in the mouth with the run game. Okay, well, Derrick Henry's not really getting going until the second half, until that defense was beaten down. Okay, we'll have our quarterback ball out for a little bit. We don't need to use the quarterback unless we have to.
Well, I don't even know if it's always been the play of the quarterback as much as it is they have the best athletes on the field.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was really what it was against Michigan State a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It was Calvin Ridley kept running past Michigan State's defensive backs. So.
They were huge. All those guys are big. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that Saban historically has, it's always been, We're going to run you down. We're going to run you down. You're running down. If the run stops working, you're already going to be so committed to it that we can nickel and dime you down the field. I think this is the first quarterback he's had that can flip a field. That's I think the big change in this Alabama team from this year's past. That's why I was one of the people who said this is his best team, and it's a big failure for Nick Saban that team did not win a championship because.
Not only that they didn't win a national championship, they got smoked.
Oh, they got smoked. I mean, you saw the first couple minutes of this game, you thought, oh, this is going to be a nice back and forth. Maybe like the first time, it was going to be a good game. And then Trevor Lawrence took it to another level, and that defense just did not quit. They just kept on going at them. And that was a huge difference maker.
So, national championship 1 year from now. Clemson, Alabama, or the field, the third team makes it. Who are you picking?
I think it largely depends on the health of Tua, to be completely honest, because I think Georgia will be another year. They'll be a significant threat again. I think they could take one away from Bama, but
can Kirby Smart beat Nick Saban though?
I think he can.
Well, but he should have his first two years, and then he got cute both times.
Yeah, no, he should have. And I think if he can learn from that, I think Georgia has a very legitimate shot.
It's fair.
Surprising Alabama late in the season, and if. We don't know what the field's going to look like next year other than obvious. I think Clemson's going to be there. Bama, I'm not so sure. I think it depends on how Tua comes back from these injuries. He got banged up late in the year, if he can hold it together. And, like I said, I think Georgia is the team that will determine if Bama gets to the championship game.
Kirby can't lose a third time to Alabama.
I don't think so. I mean,
because if he loses a third time to Alabama, it's officially a case of Saban owns Kirby.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I completely agree with that. The first time in the championship game, you lose to him. Okay. You got to your first national championship game. You had the jitters.
Yeah, cool. And it was in his second season at Georgia.
Second season. I mean, cool. You're kind of new to this game. At least at that level, you know what I mean. But the regular season, that was a stupid play calling. He played not to lose.
Right.
You can't do that against Bama. You can't do that against top tier teams. And realistically, you shouldn't be doing that during the season.
You can't do it against Bama twice. That's the thing. Because I think you're absolutely right in the sense that, it's Kirby Smart's first time in a national championship mm-hmm. game. It's only his second year as a head coach. He still should have won that game.
Oh, yeah.
But if you want to write him a pass for that, I can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Because to the point you made, it's his second season at a big boy program like Georgia. The second time around,
no, that's
where you're winning by two scores in the second half, it's inexcusable.
Yeah, you can't do that. It was bad. Kirby Smart's a good coach. I think he'll learn from it. I think next year, with everything Georgia has, with Fromm coming back.
A lot of talent coming in.
I think there is a legitimate chance that Georgia finally gets it on Bama. So I'm not sold on Bama Clemson.
It would be the fourth time in the national championship.
I'm not convinced we're going to see Dabo Saban again next year.
All right, sounds good. What I want to do right now is we'll hit our first break. Ray, I see you. I will get to you coming right out of the break. When we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit because we're going to talk a little bit of college hoops. Big win for the Spartans over the weekend, and they host Purdue tonight, the Boilermakers, and we'll see where that goes. But I think Michigan State shouldn't have too much of a hard time with Purdue tonight. But I'll give you my full thoughts after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is AM870 WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin. All right, welcome back to AM870 WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. Al will be back for Friday's show. Just wrapping a little bit about Clemson, Alabama, and where you're at with the Clemson Tigers. Are they still likable to you, or are they on the same plane as Alabama? For me, they're right up there with Bama moving forward. Any third team comes along, I'm going to root for them to beat Clemson and Alabama just because You know, as great as entertaining as these games have been really before this season was a little bit tough to watch. But as great as a couple of these games have been between Bama and Clemson, you know, I do kind of want to see some new blood come along. So, you know, I'm kind of done with Clemson as my underdog, if you will. Not really an underdog, but I just like them more than Bama. I think those days are over for me. But right now, let's go to our phone lines. Ray is on line one. He's got a story about something going down at the University of Michigan from a while back, I suppose. Ray, how we doing, baby?
Jack, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my friend. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm going to tell you a story, and this is a true story, okay?
All right.
I was a huge Michigan fan from the 60s to 2006 when they fired me, okay?
Yep.
That's when we had a ball now. But anyways, Greg Madison, this is the biggest
I knew it was going to be something Greg Madison, Ray.
He's the biggest weasel I've ever seen. I'm going to tell you why, okay?
Okay.
Back in the 90s when he was under Lloyd Carr, I ripped him for like 6 years that they didn't know how to play defense, they didn't know how to coach. So I'm down there with my kids, picture day. My daughter's taking a camera, taking a picture with the players. And Madison comes up and taps me on the shoulder, and he said, you know, we don't like you around here. I said, what? What's the matter, Mr. Madison? He said, you've been ripping us, and we don't like it. I didn't hear it, but I heard it from other people. I said, sir, I said, how come Nebraska can win all these national titles and we can't ever do it? He said, well, they got 100 walk-ons, but we're the greatest coaches around. The next year, that same year, after they pulled an upset on Ohio State in 96, he leaves to go to Notre Dame. He says, well, he's going to get his kids to get a free education in Notre Dame. He stays there 4 years. He does nothing. They win the national title the next year in Michigan. I go to the Rose Bowl. They win the national championship. I'm happier now. So anyways, two more years at Florida. He did nothing at Notre Dame, nothing at Florida. He comes back to Michigan. He talks Brady Hoke, Rich Rodriguez, and Harbaugh to put him on as a coach. He's there 8 years. Now he's left because he thinks, you know, like Lloyd Carr was going to get fired in 96 and end up winning a national championship without him. He thinks Harbaugh is going to get fired, so he's going to Ohio State. What a weasel.
So you think it's because he thinks Jim Harbaugh is going to get fired and he wants to save skin before that? That's what you're saying?
Well, that's what he did under Lloyd Carr. I mean, come on. All these players, they're crying about wanting to keep these players to play. And yet these coaches up and move. You see all the moves this guy made, and he hasn't ever won anywhere he's been. They just screwed Ohio State's program up getting him.
You really think they screwed up Ohio State's program by getting Greg Madison? I think he's got some talent as a coach, you know, in terms of the D-line, though, Ray.
That guy has never did anything. I've never seen him win anywhere he's been.
Well, you know what? I think you're right in the sense that I think it's an interesting move to make him a defensive coordinator, because at this stage in his life, and kind of, I don't disagree with you that I don't think I'd want him to be my defensive coordinator, but I think he's been great with that defensive line, Ray. I mean, you've seen what Michigan's done the last couple of years. You know, they've had such a great defense in college football, and it's all predicated on the play of their guys up front, you know, the Mo Hursts and the Chase Winoviches and the Rashawn Garys. I think he's done a great job with that position.
Yeah, but
group.
Those two guys are gone. They're both gone. The linebacker's gone.
Yep.
The defensive back left. We'll see what they do next year. But it sounds like to me he went to Ohio State because he's scared to death that Harbaugh's going to get fired next year. He just wants a job somewhere.
Well, Ray, the way I heard it was Jim Harbaugh wasn't going to renew Greg Madison's contract.
Oh, yeah. That's what I figured, too. It might be that he wasn't going to renew it. Yeah, so that's why he went to Ohio State. That might be considered. Everybody wants a job, okay? I understand. He wants to get money. But I'm just saying, but these hypocrites down there, all these coaches, they want to talk these players into staying, and they up and leave all the time.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% on that, Ray. But you know what? For me, I just think kind of the move to get rid of Greg Madison is because, you know, you saw Michigan's defense get exposed the last two games, right? You saw it against Ohio State and you saw it against Florida. And I don't think Michigan's moving on from Don Brown because, you know, you've heard Harbaugh rave about Don Brown. And I think although the blueprint might be out on kind of how to beat one of his defenses, I think it's tough for me for, you know, the first 10, 11 weeks of the season to be lauding Don Brown as a great coordinator and firing him to end the year. You know, I don't think they can move on from Don Brown. I think this was a move they had to make just because, you know, Greg Madison's been a mainstay, and they really hadn't gotten enough production the last couple games
from the defensive line. It wasn't good enough against Ohio State. It wasn't good enough against Florida. So I think they had to make a change. I think they had to make a change. What's that?
Don Brown, is he going to stay there?
From the looks of it right now, Ray, I mean, I know the Temple job opened up again a couple days ago, but you know what? I would always be surprised if Don Brown would leave just because I think he's got a great situation at Michigan, Ray, because you know, Jim Harbaugh wants to be plugged into the offense, obviously, but he's really divested himself from the defensive side of the ball, and it's really been Michigan's strength since he's gotten there. And Don Brown has all the resources he needs at Michigan to cultivate a good defense year in and year out, and he's a great recruiter. And at this stage in his life, he's never been a head coach. I don't understand why, you know, at the age of 65 or whatever he is, why he'd want to be a head coach right now. So I don't see him leaving unless he's fired, Ray.
Okay, well, then they weren't going to retain Madison. I didn't know that part.
Yeah, you know what? That had kind of been the rumor, was that, you know, Harbaugh wasn't going to renew his contract. So that's what I think it was. I think it was interesting that Ohio State wanted him as a defensive coordinator,
though.
Why are
all these Michigan players tweaking that he's a traitor leaving Michigan to go to Ohio State?
Well, you know, just because it's a rivalry, obviously. And,
yeah.
You know, he's been at Michigan. You know, to your point, he left to go to Notre Dame, and they won the national title, obviously. But he came back. He's been at Michigan he left for a couple of years, but he's been there since way before I was born, Ray. Probably before Al was born.
Oh, I told you, it goes way back. He was under Lloyd Carr 6-8 years, and then he left and went to Notre Dame. Then he went to Florida. Then he come back, and he got another 8 years. I don't know how the hell they let him go to these other schools and then let him come back like that. That's the traitor to me.
I think it's just because he can coach. But you know what, Ray? We really appreciate it. Call back tomorrow. We can talk some more about this, all right?
Let's go on to Ohio State for a second.
Okay.
That Fields guy, you think he'll be able to get right in? Because I'm worried about their quarterback situation with Haskins leaving.
Well, they got the other kid, Tate Martell, who Urban Meyer really loved. He kind of reminded him a lot of Tim Tebow, or right-handed Tim Tebow. It'll be interesting to see if Justin Fields can get a waiver and he'll be eligible to play next year. I think that's the big question right now, Ray. From a talent standpoint, I would say he'd probably be the guy just because he's 6'3". He's a really impressive athlete. It'll be about now whether he can become eligible for next season with the waiver.
I heard they had some racial slurs against him. He's got a good case, I heard, to get the waived, the year waived.
You know, that'll be interesting, I guess. I never heard that, but that'll be interesting to follow. Appreciate it, Ray.
All right, buddy.
All right. So that is Ray from Indiana, the one, the only. But you know what? Let's hit our second break, actually, and when we come back, we will now get to our Spartan Hoops discussion, previewing tonight's game against Purdue, recapping the weekend's game over Ohio State. And I got a question for Connor and Alec regarding Josh Lankford. So stick around, don't go anywhere. This is AM 870 WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to AM 870 WKAR's Current Sports. Jack Kerwin in for Al Martin today. Got Connor Mathis in studio with me, Alec Rio behind the glass as well. And finally, we can shift gears to our discussion on the state of Michigan State basketball. You know, what they need to do moving forward, what we should see in tonight's game. Do the Spartans have a shot? Of course they have a shot. Should they come away with the win? Of course they should come away with the win. But that remains to be seen. So I have a question for Connor and Alec. I kind of want to know where they're at with it. Basically, the crux of the matter is, you know, Tom Izzo has not been thrilled about not having Josh Lankford. You know, he's made that much clear, is that, you know, they've really missed him on the defensive side of the ball. And I certainly agree with that point, especially from a communication standpoint, just with all the backdoor cuts we saw against Ohio State in the first half of that game. You know, communication breakdowns that I think Josh Lankford's absence, you know, that plays a big role in that, obviously. But, you know, going into the Louisville game earlier this season, I got to say I was more nervous going into that game without Matt McQuaid than I was going into the Northwestern and the Ohio State games without Josh Lankford. And I understand Josh Lankford is a more talented basketball player than Matt McQuaid. I am well aware of that. But let me just kind of give you my thoughts here. Let me kind of, you know, see if I can sell this to you. Joshua Lankford is really the only player consistently on Michigan State's team offensively who stops the ball. You know, their offense is predicated on running the offense through Cassius Winston, Cassius finding the open man, and scoring a ton of buckets off of assists, right? So for me, Josh Langford has obviously been a very inconsistent player ever since he's gotten to campus, okay? On nights that he is on, he can drop 20, 24 points like it's just no problem. You know, probably the best example of that in his time at Michigan State so far was last season's game against Notre Dame. It was, you know, a top five matchup, and Josh Langford was on, he was on fire. He was spectacular. The problem is, when Josh Langford is off, when he's not shooting well, he shoots Michigan State right out of games. And you saw it against Louisville earlier this season. He was able to kind of will them back into it a little bit towards the end of that game. But, you know, I kind of maintained that throughout the second half of that game, if they would have run their offense in kind of its optimal nature where Cassius Winston finds the open man, dishes a ton of assists, and he runs the offense, I don't think that game ever would have gone to overtime. Obviously, I don't want TV Teddy officiating any games, and I didn't think that game was officiated well either. But you know what? That's not really an excuse here. So, you know, that's just kind of where I'm at with it is Matt McQuaid's obviously not as talented as Josh Langford, but he fits better within the offense, and he doesn't really ever take bad shots. And overall, I guess kind of my overlying point is here, the Spartans should glean from these next couple weeks because I think they're going to be all right without Josh Langford. I think in the long term, they will be better with Josh Langford when he comes back if he knows that he can work within the team. And what I mean by that is when Josh Langford is off, when it's not his game, when he's just not shooting the ball well, he should know his role and should slow down a little bit, not try to shoot himself out of a slump, take the ball off dribble, and, you know, kind of shoot a lot of mid-range jumpers, which is what he likes to do right now. You know, what I want Josh to do when he knows, when the ball's not going in for him, I want him to be a strictly catch-and-shoot guy. You know, we kind of saw it in the Vegas Invitational against, I believe it was UCLA. He shot the ball better in that game. But he played well in both games, if I recall correctly. And you know what? When he catches that three ball in stride, sets his feet and shoots, he can be a pretty good shooter. I think when he runs into a lot of problems is when he tries to do too much offensively. And what I've seen from this team, I don't think he has to do that. So that's kind of where I'm at with this. Connor, am I crazy?
There's a couple points I want to make. Like on the defense, Matt McQuaid in the offense. The one thing that I love Matt McQuaid on defense. He's probably one of
He's our best on-ball defender.
Yeah.
He is very good
at his craft of just defending, taking charges. I mean, he's what you want as a wing defender. Offensively, my problem with Matt McQuaid is that a lot of times he looks I don't want to say scared to shoot, but like from a coach perspective, he looks like there's sometimes he has a shot and he just says no. I mean, what I like about Josh Langford, and by no means should he, like, sometimes you got to shoot out of a funk. Other times, dude, you got to swing it. Like, it's not your night. Find someone.
I don't know how often you need to shoot out of a funk on this team, though. I think they have a lot of options.
I'm talking basketball in general. It's a lot of shooters, that's how they get out of a slump. With Langford, I think, like you said, he does need to know. If it's an off night, Cassius is going to get everyone the ball on this team. If it's an off night, take a second seat, because he will find an opening for you. You're going to get the ball. And then you can start building some confidence back up and things like that. But, you know, I don't know if I still value Josh Langford more on offense than I do Matt McQuaid. That's my big takeaway from that.
Well, no question. My whole thing with Josh Langford is because I'll agree with you if Josh Langford does kind of what you and I have been talking about. And when he's off, he works within the flow of the offense because he's more talented than Matt McQuaid offensively. No one's. I'm not trying to debate to the contrary on that. But, you know, just where I'm at with him is I think this has been a very valuable teaching moment and a very valuable learning moment for the Spartan team is that, you know, they're not contingent on any one player. Unlike, you know, what we've seen the last couple of years where they've had a couple NBA guys. Exactly. You know, this is a team game. You know, I think come March they'll run probably 11 guys. I see every freshman not named Thomas Kithier playing a role on this team come March. So, you know, for me, it's all about Josh Langford working within the scope of the team just because he doesn't need to be that guy. They have plenty of options offensively, and, you know, by taking bad shots, he really only hinders the offense. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. What about you, Alec? Do you think I'm totally crazy?
No, not at all. Langford's play style kind of reminds me of Reggie Jackson's on the Pistons. So,
oh, that's a major insult.
It's not a major insult.
No, I understand what you're saying. No, continue. Yeah,
it's like he makes those athletic plays that sometimes that'll wow like the audience and stuff. But then he'll take like some open looks that you'd see as like a C minus in 2K. Like some of those shots that he takes are just like it just boggles your mind. You're just like, why did he do that? And it only just hurts the offense at points.
No, I agree with that. I mean, you know, as far as the Reggie Jackson's comparison is concerned, I love Josh Langford and I can't stand Reggie Jackson. But I do understand where you're going with it, just because he'll take bad shots when he doesn't have to. You know, so I think that's an all right comparison.
No disrespect to either of them.
You can disrespect Reggie Jackson. He stinks. No, you know what? I see where you're going with that. So, you know, I think that's an interesting comparison. But, you know, what are you looking to see from Purdue tonight? You think the Spartans come away with win easily? I think they will.
I don't know if it's going to be easy per se, because Purdue always plays MSU tough. They have for the last 3 years. Granted, they had some, you know, trees. But, you know, their defense, I looked up some stats. Their defensive rating is, you know, they're 21st overall. Pretty good. Their offense is pretty good. I think they play Michigan State close. I think if it becomes, a type of game that we saw, like, against Northwestern, where Michigan State just kind of pulled away, I think State will probably pull away late. I think it'll be a contested game, though.
That's interesting. You know what? Looking at Purdue's schedule so far this season, for me, I don't see them as having much of a shot in this game. I don't want to jinx State, but I don't see them as having much of a shot in this game, just because, you know, most of the wins they've accumulated have just been at home. They really haven't done much on the road at all. I mean, you know, looking at it, I think I only saw them so far. They've won only one or two games away from home. So, you know, kind of to Graham Couch's point that he always makes, is you can't underestimate the value of true road wins. And, you know, for me, I look to the Spartans. They got to take care of business tonight. You know, Carson Edwards is a great player, obviously, but I think Cassius Winston's the best point guard in the Big Ten right now. Matt Harms is very talented defensively, but he's not Isaac Haas, and Nick Ward shouldn't have much of an issue scoring down low on him. You know, he's obviously tall. He's got a little bit of height on Nick Ward, but Nick Ward's probably got, you know, 40 pounds on him, I'd say, almost, even with the weight that he's lost in the offseason. So, you know, it'll be interesting. Alec, what's your prediction for tonight's game?
I think they'll win by about 10, honestly. A good enough win. I don't see it being like an absolute blowout like some of the last few games.
Sure.
Yeah, like Iowa or Green Bay or anything like that. But yeah, I definitely see it being similar to Ohio State's game last game.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And you know what? I think as long as Cassius Winston takes care of the basketball, you know, he doesn't have to be the focal point of the offense from a shooting standpoint, as long as, you know, he distributes well enough, then I think the Spartans will be just fine in that game. But you know what? That's just about all the time we have for today's episode of WKAR's Current Sports. Connor Mathis will be back with you, we think, tomorrow. So tune in then, and Al will be back in on Friday. But until tomorrow, we're on a 23-hour break. Be easy, people.